This is sex. Everyone gets what they want. This is sexploration.
Explore.
Play.
This is sexploration with Monica.
Sex is proof that God loves us and wants us to have fun.
Sexploration with Monica on FCCFreeRadio.com.
Oh, what a night tonight is going to be. We are having a sex geek potluck. It's basically like a conference, a very informal conference of sex educators. We have filmmakers, we have sex workers, we have activists, we have people who are making some very sexy and interesting and strange sexual technology to do scientific experiments on orgasm. And it was the brainchild of sex educator Reid Mihalko of readaboutsex.com. We're also sitting here with his partner, Allie Moon, who is a sex educator in her own right. She writes lots of interesting stuff. Lesbian werewolves come to mind.
I think a lesbian steampunk story right now.
Exciting.
It's very exciting. There's mechanisms involved. It's fun.
Oh, steampunk, like as in technology.
Like copper and like, brass and...
Oh.
Yeah, yeah, it's not a euphemism for a sex toy.
Yeah, Tesla coil.
That's what she said.
That's what somebody said.
And you are working on socially conscious erotica.
Yes, absolutely. I am. I'm working on a new business idea of creating basically ways of getting people to learn how to write interesting stories that also have a social conscience and how to actually approach writing fiction and stories around writing for change rather than just writing a story to write a story, like how to actually approach fiction writing as if it's an activism.
Right. Well, I mean, anytime you make someone more sexually open, it's actually helping the world, in my opinion.
I agree. I absolutely agree.
And it's destabilizing hierarchy and creating community, which is precisely what the Sex Geek Potluck is all about.
He said, rolling on his wheelchair, trying to get to the mic. Yeah, so for the people tuning in right now, I'm trying to flip camera some of this, and I'm also your official wrangler.
Yes, and my token straight guy.
Wait a second.
But you don't have to be straight to be the token straight guy. Basically, you just have to be my, like, someone who isn't
your
me,
bitch.
Basically. No. I mean, if you want to be my bitch, it's only consensual, right? Okay? We only do what you want to do. That's the big rule on Sexploration with Monica.
Yes.
You only do what you want to do.
Yes, Mistress Monica.
Oh, I love it when you say that. Okay. So the idea is with the token straight guy is it's someone to come up with questions from their own unique, authentic experience that I just wouldn't come up with because we all have our own experiences, and I want this show to ask questions of people from my experience and other people's experience as well. So that's why I try to be inclusive of lots of different. I mean, we've had token straight guys that were women. We've had token straight guys that were gay.
You know, you're thinking straight guy like in the comedy, old school realm of
heterosexual. I was confused.
But also, you know, I like having heterosexual guys in the studio too, because I think that especially when you're talking about, you know, feminist queer stuff, it's good to have a straight guy in the room just to be like,
what?
Yeah, exactly. or whatever is authentic. You know what I mean?
I understand.
Exactly. Exactly. So, Reid, if you don't know much about his work, you can find him at readaboutsex.com. And he's also the co-founder of Cuddle Party, which is this great idea where it's a way for people to share sensuality and touch, but without making it about sex.
That's right. You know, it's about getting cuddly without it about being, you know, about the sex.
Right. So people like dress up in pajamas and you talk about boundaries and you listen to each other's heartbeats. And that's how you got into sex education?
That's how I got into giving blowjobs for a workshop.
You don't give blowjobs at Cuddle Party.
No, not at all. But it led to that. It was the gateway drug.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Because then he does like dildos, dental dams, and deep throating. Oh my.
And you, by the way, the only one who adds oh my to that.
Oh, really?
Whenever you say that, yeah.
You should put it on the flyer.
Maybe I could. No, but it's actually the work for me is about how do we get men and women in our culture to not be so afraid about talking about sex and relationships, talking about intimacy, and how to be better communicators in our needs and wants and in relationships, whatever those relationships are.
Totally.
You know, and the skill sets that it takes that we talk about in Cuddle Party, which is, you know, an intimacy workshop around social non-sexual affection. Those skill sets are the exact same skill sets that you need to bring into the bedroom to create the touch and affection of a more sexual nature, of a more NC-17
nature.
Talking
about your boundaries, being with what you want.
Yeah.
Communicating.
And that's nowadays, I do a lot of speaking at colleges and traveling around the country teaching workshops. And that's really kind of the baseline for all of it. That's the lowest common denominator of all the work that I do, mm-hmm. which is how to get people to talk about sex, not make it feel like going to the dentist. Mm-hmm. And how do you figure out and learn how to communicate your own boundary right. needs so that you can make yourself feel safe mm-hmm. and then invite people into that safe space. And that's really a quick formula for how do you create intimacy, whether it's just socially non-sexual affection or full on out, like, let's...
Well, because then you have a choice and then you can really play with, okay, what do I want in this moment?
Exactly.
And, you know, how do I make a safe space for myself?
Yeah. And a lot of us weren't role modeled with the relationships we grew up in.
Yeah, totally.
Like my mom and dad never said, okay, Reed, this is how your father and I create safe space for ourselves and negotiate our
totally.
Boundaries around touch and sensuality.
Yeah.
That didn't happen for most folks.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I don't think I even realized that you could say no. I thought you just had to avoid the situation mm-hmm. as a 16-year-old.
Which would explain the first couple of times I wanted to be on your show.
No. Really? No.
She just avoided me, folks.
Just so that's not true. So funny. I've had Reed on my show several times. Every single time. It's lovely. And we make out.
When does that happen?
On the later in the
break.
Show.
Nice.
Later in the show.
When you're talking, you'll hear in the background.
No
That's
one's
it.
Listening.
And actually, we're going to talk about around at colleges how sex education at colleges is being threatened. Mm-hmm. Megan Andalou is going to talk about that, how in Rhode Island and many of the New England states, they're talking about how to get sex education out of colleges because the kids, it's like they're saying that they're blaming HIV on sex education.
It's which makes a little bit backwards, sense. Folks.
Right.
A little
yeah.
bit backwards.
It goes
yeah.
the other way, yeah. right? The yep. more you know, the more likely you are to have safe sex
like
and delay activity, even.
It's what people are doing with Planned Parenthood right now. Like the GOP is trying to cut funding for Planned Parenthood because they think it's causing more abortions.
No, it's because they want to keep their money and they don't want to pay taxes.
Right.
And they like to keep the dominant culture hegemony the way it is.
Mm-hmm. How about we just teach people how not to get pregnant so that they
Wouldn't
don't
that be great?
Have to have abortions?
And that way there aren't any unwanted children in this world.
Right.
And that would help everyone, particularly disadvantaged people, women. I just think it's such a...
Anti-choice people believe that life begins at conception and ends at birth.
Right. Right. You don't get any more choices.
Exactly.
Yeah,
where we
exactly.
all know that life really begins with Sexploration with Monica on FCC Free Radio.
Well, it may not begin there, but it certainly gets more fun. In fact, we'll have a lot of people in today's show.
Yeah, who do we have coming on
We
tonight?
Have May May, Kink on Tap, Priscilla, who talks about Sex Box, this movie that she's making. Julianne Carroll, you see, you have Eve Minax, professional dominatrix. Tahil is doing DACA training. Oh, we're going to talk about... Okay, a DACA...
Will you tell us later?
Is a... Yes, I will. But I could tell you now, too. You know what a tantrika is? Like a sacred spiritual shaman person, but a man. Just think of a gigolo, but sacred. It's a sacred gigolo.
Sacred gigolo.
Sacred gigolo. Does anybody have that domain name?
Sacredgigolo.com just got bought, right?
Yeah, okay. So, and then Roland, who's also from Tahil's DACA training, is going to talk about my big, fat, queer-friendly puja.
Oh. Puja. That sounds dirty.
Hey.
Yeah.
It's... You can do it with white tantra, which is like sexual energy, but only the meditation kind. So you don't actually have sex. You just share energy. And you like embody each other's divine beloved by looking into each other's eyes and being.
Stop looking at me.
So we've got that and Eve Minax.
She's
this
staring
is
at
really
me.
Quite a range.
I know. It's so exciting. So we've got, yeah, exactly. So we've
so
got.
This is a big lineup tonight, ladies and gentlemen. We have the Sex Geek Potluck happening tonight here with Sexploration with Monica on FCC Free Radio.
Right. Yeah, it's going to be a really good show. And Allie, if you could actually run and get Megan,
sure.
then we will start.
So we were just the warm-up? Is
yeah,
that
we,
yeah.
You're
not,
the
you know what, we're
the, team.
We're not even the four. We are not
it
even
was
the
Reed's idea.
On
no,
the
you
show.
Are.
The
you,
cocktails.
Yeah.
You know what? We're just the dinner. We're the whole, like, I'm gonna pick up the check now. Bow, chicka,
bow, bow. Right. And then we leave and let the other people.
No, no. Play. I mean, we have 10 people in a 2-hour show. We have to keep it snappy.
This is like the Sexploration with Monica orgy.
No, seriously. I mean, usually I only have 3 people on a whole show.
Are you going to be okay?
Yeah.
Are you going to be able to last this long?
Well, I know.
This is like the Monica gangbang. Like the Sexploration with Monica gangbang.
I have to, like, keep it light, and we're going to have to, like, move through guests, and I'm not going to be able to delve in as deeply as I usually do.
It's serious.
Euphemisms abound here, ladies and gentlemen.
Seriously,
we're going to need a lot of radio lube.
That's right.
For those of you listening in, be prepared to call in.
That's right. You can also get us on Facebook, and we are online, so you can chat with us on the FCCFreeRadio.com chat. Megan is
Bring
also
us Megan,
going to join
and
us.
And Maymay is on deck.
And right, Maymay is
on
deck, too.
Megan. It was nice talking to you.
Did you guys hear about the Psygasm tool?
The PSI, the Psygasm tool.
It's Maggie Mayhem and her partner Ned designed it. It's one of these things that I'm really, like, I just learned about it tonight at the potluck. It's like a dildo, and it's all, like, wired up technologically, where it will, like, measure the about
PSI,
your
pounds per square inch.
Yeah, of your orgasm. So it's like
vaginal or anal contraction.
Yeah, but they put it in your anus. So it's the Sex Geek Potluck. Right now we have Megan Andalou. She's the co-founder for the Center for Sexual Culture and Health. We also have Jesse Fisher, the sexademic, in the studio. Welcome to Sexploration with Monica, Jesse.
Hi, glad to be back.
Yeah.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay, so Jesse, this is Megan. Do you guys know each other?
Kind of.
Online.
Okay. Admirers.
See?
Online.
Yes, mutual admirers.
Yes.
I got your email today, by the way.
Cool.
I'm going to respond soon. Thank you.
Okay, see how that's worked. And this is why we like to have sex experts meeting in real life, because we have a lot to talk about, and because the way our culture is not so open about sex, sometimes, you know, you can get a little isolated and you're only doing your stuff on the internet. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Yeah, it can feel lonely.
Yeah, so now we're bringing it out in the open. Speaking of out in the open, I have this sex toy on the countertop, and everyone thinks that maybe it's a beverage. Okay, so you brought me this beautiful gift. So tell me about this, Megan. What is it?
So it's a male masturbator. It is called the Flip Hole, made by Tanga.
The Flip Hole.
Flip Hole. Oh, no, I'm sorry. That's the docking toy.
Oh, this is the docking toy.
That is the docking toy, yes.
Okay, yes. Mm-hmm.
And so that...
So like a docking station.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's going to be popular at Folsom.
I think it would be.
Totally. So basically what happens is you put one wang in one side, and then you put another wang in the other side, and then they can sort of dance membranously, because there's a tiny little membrane in the middle, right about here, right?
I like how you're using the word wang.
Right?
Yeah, I haven't heard that word in a long time.
Well, you know, on the radio show.
I like it.
I like to keep it friendly. I like to provoke people by what we're talking about rather than the words we use.
Yeah.
So we have the bitter side here, which is...
a little bit more firm.
Mm-hmm. And then the sweet side.
Which is a little soft.
So you can put the... And it's kind of safer because there's a membrane.
Yep.
But you want to make sure that you're having... your experience with your side,
yes,
if you wanted to stay safer.
It's a great visual aid. It's a way to engage in mutual masturbation in a more fun manner.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Well, it's a way for two guys to have sex with each other, and both of them are penetrating.
Or if you have a strap on and you're getting a little frisky.
Oh, yeah.
You guys do know where the term docking originally came from,
no,
right?
No, tell me.
Bring it
so,
on.
So docking is originally when you have two guys who both have foreskin, who mm-hmm. are uncircumcised,
yes.
And you have them going back and forth mm-hmm. in between with each other's foreskin.
Oh.
And so that's basically super easy docking.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. I didn't know you could do that.
Yes, yeah. You can.
And, cool.
And if I can jump in for just a moment, because
being
somebody who owns a factory installed penis, I think what's important in talking about this and why I was recommending that this be the one that we give you is, even though you could strap one on,
uh-huh.
I just imagine you as being the person in the middle holding.
Yeah, no, totally.
A shared experience.
Now that I have this, I'm like totally thinking, okay,
how do I use this?
And there's also this kind of like Santana thing you're going on. Like, insert your favorite Santana song here.
Totally. Excitement. Well, thank you so much for this exciting gift.
Yes.
Although we did want to talk a little bit about the big controversy about college students not getting sex education because of funding.
Yeah. So there seems to be at least the start of commotion regarding if college students deserve sex education. If they are
deserve.
Old, if they're old right. enough to receive sex education.
Wait, right.
College students? Yes, college students.
So it's as if they've lost the battleground within the public schools, and
yes.
so now they're going on to
They're moving
to
on
college.
To the college students, and they're referring to them as kids.
Oh,
kids
really?
These yeah. days, right? Like you're over the age of 18 and you're supposed to not know about
this
sex.
This is not going to go over well with the college student.
It is not going over with the college students very well. The college personnel are freaking out because they are coming under pressure from the religious right and church groups. And the newspapers are picking up the salacious types of sex education programs that are being funded by...
Right, they're saying, well, there's pornography, and they're teaching about sex toys, and this is encouraging sexual behavior, and AIDS, people are going to get AIDS, because they're learning about sex. Okay, why do people not get AIDS because they're learning about sex? Anyone?
I'm sorry, but masturbation is the safest way that people can play. And so if sex toys are going to be used, that is a fantastic way to prevent any transmission of STIs, pregnancy,
right.
and it's a way to learn about your body.
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So there's been some commotion regarding sex education, whether or not college students. I was reading a blog just from one person, but he was like, that's why I don't send my kids to four-year colleges. I will only send my kids to trade schools or two-year programs so that they don't get exposed.
So they won't care.
So they won't learn anything about sex.
The liberal, yes, it's amazing. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, because you're supposed to learn about it naturally from another person who's also never done it before. And then you think, okay, what do people think of when they think of sex? They only think of penis and vagina intercourse. So if you think that that's the only way to have sex, you're skipping to that, right? And how... Has anyone ever skipped straight to the penis-vagina intercourse? It's painful.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yes.
It was painful.
It was painful. It's not as good. If you treat sexuality as a full thing that happens with your whole body, in my opinion, you could teach kids better stuff.
It's better, more holistic. It
right.
encompasses that humans are sexual.
Right.
Top to toe.
Right.
And... It takes some of the charge away in terms of these are the sexual parts. You know, somebody was asking me recently, where are the erogenous zones? I'm like, your whole body is an erogenous zone. Everything. We're not just going to focus on this part or this part because, frankly, we talk about those parts a lot, but it's our whole body. We're sexual beings.
Right. And we're going to talk about that a little bit more with Tahil. He's a DACA and his work is all about sacred spirituality, tantra, and it's about sexual energy and life energy are actually the same thing. So it's not just this bad, evil thing that we make separate from ourselves, but that it's really part of us and sacred, and it is our spirit that we're sharing with another person. In fact, I heard this really amazing thing from someone on OkCupid recently that he has this thing wherever he makes out with a new person, he actually gets their energy, and he was making out with this woman who was really amazing at math and like really smart, and her name had something to do with the Pythagorean theorem. When he made out with her, he started to visualize geometric shapes in his head. And like, right? And so he was dating her for this short amount of time, and she was this amazing, really smart woman. And like, so as they were like sharing energy, he started getting all this
so
geometric
like
stuff in his head.
Picking up on skills through sexual osmosis.
Yeah, he was saying that he actually was sensitive to someone's energy so much that when he was making out with them, like he actually really receives their energy.
You know, that explains a lot about when I was making out with this guy named Dick. All the imagery that was going on. It so
okay, when you're making out with a new person and you're like starting and you're learning and you're responding and like you're like, okay, how do I engage with you and how do you engage with me? You know how like sometimes that takes a little bit of energy and like you're kind of
feeling
like
everybody
that
out.
Exactly. But like you're really feeling them, right?
Mm-hmm.
And like and they're really feeling you and like you're learning how you communicate together and how you flow together. Is it possible that we are actually exchanging life energy? And if we're actually, like, not just superficially, like, gliding over each other's life energy, but actually melding it together, and, like, why couldn't we exchange something neat other than what we know that we're exchanging?
It's more than just putting something in a hole.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. So much more. So much more. So, yeah, we have a really exciting show. I'm really excited about it.
We have fantastic people here.
In fact, we're going to talk to May May about remaking male submission. Mm-hmm. You're doing something at the Center for Sexual Health and Culture and Health.
Center for Sexual Pleasure and Health. Yep.
Pleasure and Health. That's even better.
Yes.
Pleasure's better. Yeah, good.
Yeah, so May May is coming in to speak about male submission in Rhode Island, which I'm really excited about.
Cool.
Yeah.
Tell me more about the Center for Sexual Pleasure and Health and why you started it.
I started the CSPH because I wanted the medical communities and the pleasure-based sex communities to actually talk to each other. Because very often the medical world is like, oh, we're talking about orgasms that might defund us. We need to talk about the bad things. And the pleasure-focused aspects of sex tend to be very, I'm so sick of hearing about the uterus and fallopian tubes, I just want to learn how to get off. There is a central ground, and so...
Well, you're learning about, like, these alien things that you never see, and it doesn't really have anything to do with sex. It just has to do with reproduction.
Right. So I wanted the two worlds to come together, and so I started the CSPH, and it's... has a lending library, we have classes, we have internships, and it's a place for people to come and learn in a safe environment about medically accurate information regarding sex.
Cool.
It's pretty nifty. It's like 1950s living room type of feel. Make people feel a little bit more comfortable.
Right.
Yeah.
You have that in common with Jesse Fisher, that you're both academic sex educators and working kind of the academic community teaching about sex.
Yeah.
Isn't that right?
Yeah. I mean, the way I approach it is trying to take your knowledge from academia and try and make it something that you can teach to the general population. Because what you tend to see with sexuality is there's a big barrier of access to information. And what you find with a lot of people at the general population is if you are not upper class, you're going to be learning about just STIs and condoms, and that's it.
Right, and
the
message is just don't get pregnant. Seeing horrifying pictures of cauliflower warts.
Yeah, the horrible, horrible pictures.
Which is not helpful because most of the time somebody gets an STI
and it doesn't look like
it
that.
It doesn't look anything like that, and they're so terrified of having an STI because of the stigma. They see one tiny little thing and they're like, oh, maybe it's going to go away.
It'll go away. Yeah.
And then the symptom goes away, but the STI is still there, and so it doesn't help anybody. But yeah, we're coming from a similar place.
We do, yeah. And that's a hard road to walk down, I think.
Right.
It is.
And there is a lot of stigma with STIs. I mean, even among sex educators, I've had the conversation where, you know, you're like, blah, 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 gonorrhea. And then everyone is like, you know, and it's just a germ. I mean, it doesn't mean that you're a bad person or a slut or anything.
I mean, the anxiety around it, though,
exactly.
It's so, so deep.
Yeah, it's huge.
Culturally, it runs so deep. And it's hard for even people who are sex educators
totally.
To be able to try and get over that hump of that anxiety and that, like, shame around even talking about STIs.
Right.
I had a friend who is a sex educator who recently was diagnosed with an STD, and... she was freaking out. She's like, I should know better. I shouldn't have had this happen to me. I didn't expect this to happen to me.
Prevent it.
And I feel horrible that I feel bad about the fact that I have this now. So it was so layered.
So it's almost even worse when you're a sex educator.
Yeah. Well, maybe that you would put more pressure on yourself.
Yeah.
Certainly, but I think it's always good for us to really... okay, we are human beings, and it is okay to touch each other. And there are several STIs that you can't prevent. There's only so much you can do against skin-to-skin contact viruses like HPV and herpes. You can use barrier methods, but, I mean, do you really want to live in a hamster ball for your entire life? Do you really never want to touch anyone? And is there anything wrong with touching anyone, you know?
Well, it's also, like, this interesting situation where we think, like, I'm sorry, Megan, I'm hugging you. No, but it's this weird thing, like, right, if you're, as a sexual human being, you know, when you talk to a carpenter... and they bang their thumb on a hammer or something. You don't think, oh, well, you're a sucky carpenter. Like, it's kind of like understood that in the course of your profession, these things are going to happen. And we don't talk about sex in a positive way where it's like, you know what? In the course of your profession
sexual
as a
life.
Sexual human being, you're gonna get stuff every once in a while.
You might.
It's like telling a doctor, like, oh, you must not be a good doctor because you got a cold. We don't use that kind of logic. And so all of a sudden, like for us, my community, we had a chlamydia scare and it was like,
right.
But it was like, you know what? We had the wherewithal emotionally to go through and tell all of our partners and our lovers and our play partners.
Right.
You know,
like, oh, okay, it really so. It does give you practice on talking about things in a non-triggered way. You
yeah.
know?
And then everyone got tested or went and got, you know, their checkup or whatever they right. needed to do. Right. But the emotional IQ there was high enough that it wasn't that big of a problem, but
right.
it was still
but
a surprise.
Still triggering, yeah, and yeah. still a challenge. Well, I want to talk about Maymay's work. So, Maymay, if you will join the discussion. And then we also have, okay, so who do we have after Maymay? We have Priscilla of Sexpa. Oh, Maggie, yes. Yeah, don't forget about me. Okay, so Maggie's after Maymay. So Maggie from Psygasm.
Usually she comes before me.
Oh, Maggie Mayhem.
Yeah,
yes,
that's,
exactly.
That's usually the other way around.
Yeah, awesome. She's totally next
she
door.
Here?
Maggie Mayhem's next door.
Oh, she's next door?
Yeah, go get her. Go get your hummus and go get her. Okay, so she's Maggie Mayhem's going to talk about PSIgasm. And so Maymay is here from Kink on Tap.
Hi,
Maymay. Nice to see you
so
again.
So good to see you again.
Yeah.
It's been too long.
It has been too long. We talked a little bit about how you're working with Megan Andalou about mm-hmm. remaking male submission.
Well, I'm going to be doing a seminar there at the Center for Sexual Pleasure and Health. I think it's March 23rd. I hope I got that right.
Awesome.
At the Center for Sexual Pleasure and Health called Remaking Male Submission. And what I'm going to be talking about is confronting sexism in the BDSM community.
Right.
And actually in BDSM porn and sort of the imagery, the iconography of BDSM, of SM imagery, where you see sort of a dominatrix. And then the question really is that with the leather and the whips, and is that not a virgin whore dichotomy, or is it another sort of manifestation of it? Are we sort of infused by the mainstream culture?
Well, I think that we definitely have ideas about gender that
Absolutely.
Infuse porn and kind of can be really toxic and not
Yes.
affirming of people's full sexual expression.
And yet we call it an alternative sexuality, right? And
right.
so the question is, of course, alternative to what? And then the question becomes, right? And then the question becomes, well, we talked about an alternative to this,
right?
And then we have to gauge, is it reactionary? So when we talk about alternative sexuality, is it a reaction to? And I think a lot of the formulations that we see on SM iconography, especially when it comes to men who are submissive and women who are dominant,
mm-hmm.
what we see is in fact a sort of a reification of a very misogynistic worldview,
mm.
And that's unfortunate. I, as a submissive man myself, definitely
want. Okay, back up a little bit. Okay, so how is a dominatrix
mm-hmm.
and a male submissive misogynist or woman hating?
Right. Well, it's a good question because, you know, we...
Because ordinarily people would say, oh, well, that's a very empowered woman.
Ordinarily is an interesting adjective to use there. What I find so fascinating is that so much of the pornography that we look at of dominatrices, of men being submissive, sort of desexualizes the male persona in that imagery.
Oh, yeah.
and hypersexualizes the female persona.
Mm.
And what's interesting about that, it's very much like putting the woman on a pedestal, but it's just a different pedestal. It's
right.
still a pedestal.
Right.
So the question isn't, you
rather
know,
than an objectified pedestal, it's sort of like a.
It's well, you can argue
objectified in another way.
Exactly. So it's not
like a power object.
Right. So we have this interesting notion of the male gaze or the female gaze, right, in pornography. And a lot of sort of counterculture pornographers now are making porn for women. And the idea of porn for women is that, you know, the subject in the porn, the person holding the camera, is a woman, is a female.
Uh-huh.
But in a lot of femdom porn, you don't get that.
And what's femdom porn? It's when the
female
dominant
right.
is.
And let's talk about just that phrasing.
Okay.
Femdom porn often includes men who are being submissive
mm-hmm.
and women who are being dominant, or it includes women who are being submissive and women who are being dominant.
Right.
The object in either of those situations is the female top. Right, the objectified mm-hmm. persona there is the woman being dominant. So, as a submissive guy, I have to wonder whether or not that's
why
actually catering.
Why don't you get to be objectified?
That's my question. Hey,
is that
and
good?
I realize it's a very
time?
it's hard. You know, it's a not it's a very non-objectifying thing to say. Please objectify me.
Because you're like asking for a voice.
Suddenly, you've got an agency there, and it's hard, especially for bottoms in the
because
SM community.
You don't really speak up as bottoms. So that's not what you
we're not taught agency.
Do.
We're taught
yeah.
how to be okay not having agency
right.
as bottoms. Yeah. That's a really important thing. It's really helpful and important to know that it's okay to also not have agency in some situations.
Sure.
We deal with that in reality all the time.
Mm-hmm.
On the other hand, it's also very, very, very empowering to be able to say, as a bottom, I'd like you to objectify me, please.
Right.
And you are
but
claiming
it's really
agency
nice
in
to
that.
Have the choice.
I would argue it's a way to improve the world to have a choice, right? I
mean, yeah, totally.
That's world change. That's a world-changing sort of sentiment.
It's destabilizing the hegemony and like all that stuff, the hierarchy and the dualism.
So that's what the class is going to be about in March, and I'm looking forward to it. I've never taught at the CSPH before, but I've been there, and it's a fantastic little spot.
And you are also a panelist on the Western Regional
LGBTQIA Alphabet Soup. Yes, indeed.
At UC Berkeley with UC Maggie Berkeley. Mayhem.
With Maggie, yeah. This is going to be a lot of fun. This is a BDSM 101 panel. So Louis and William, who are UC Berkeley alums and a student there, they're facilitating a panel with me, with Maggie, and a couple other people about sort of just the beginnings of BDSM. Very much for newbies. We're not going to talk about pornography a whole bunch. We're not going to talk about gays with all this. It's really going to be about, you know, how do you stay safe? What are the main theories of consent? What are the differences? Very, very, very novice level stuff.
Right.
The hope is that we'll also humanize a lot of what people see, because everyone's going to come into that room sort of having an idea of what SM is.
Right.
They're going to have an image in their head of a dominatrix. I just need to say dominatrix, and then you instantly see, you know, exactly.
She's wearing a black pencil skirt and it's leather.
Exactly. And she's got a corset on and there's heels.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
Like you instantly see that image. And that's because...
Probably red lipstick.
You know, interestingly enough, probably also a collar. And what does that say about our culture?
Right.
That's an interesting one too. But, you know, you instantly have this idea, and that comes from, of course, mainstream culture. There's a huge amount of fetishization in marketing. Have you guys seen the Volkswagen commercial with the woman wielding a whip? They're selling a car, and the way she's doing it is she's whipping the car.
Oh, interesting.
I am not, like, literally whipping
a
car. She's not whipping the car very well, but... She's
She's not whipping it well.
Her technique can use some improvement.
That's awesome.
I don't want to be too ill of her on the air, but it's less than good. But the point is that everyone sort of will come into that room having an idea of it. But the idea that we typically get from the marketers, you know, who want to sell you a Volkswagen as opposed to, you know, want you to have a good time in bed because they care about you because they're your partners.
Right.
They don't sort of understand people who do those activities as full human beings. Like, I'm a programmer. I also spend my time at the park, and I like Vietnamese sandwiches. And these are things that you don't typically hear about.
Because you live in the Tenderloin.
Because I live in the Tenderloin, which is
near
awesome.
Eddie, the sandwich place.
Oh, Saigon Sandwich?
I love that place.
big slice of carrot.
Totally.
Really good. But so we're hoping to also humanize people who do SM.
Right.
In a way that we're hoping will be a sort of a gentle introduction for folks and make it less scary. The subtitle of the talk of the panel is called Kink Isn't So Scary.
Cool. This is Maymay from Kink on Tap. You can find him at kinkontap.com. We've been talking about his work remaking male submission, and then, of course, this conference at UC Berkeley coming up.
Very exciting. There's also another conference, actually, if you are on the East Coast, Kink for All Providence 2 is happening on March 19th, so I'll be there for that as well.
Oh, neat.
Yeah, Megan might be there too, in fact.
Oh, neat. Megan Andalou. Cool.
Yeah, and that's at kinkforall.org.
And Maggie Mayhem is also going to be on the Western Regional LGBTQIA conference at UC Berkeley as a panelist. What are you looking forward to talking about?
I am looking forward to so much about this conference because I actually attended when I was an undergraduate and a freshman the UC LGBTQIA conference in 2004 and 2005. And I absolutely loved that experience. I'd never seen so many queers in one place at one time.
Isn't that nice to be like, wow, I'm not even that freaky right now.
Oh my God, it was amazing. I would have the most amazing conversation of my life, followed by the most amazing conversation of my life, followed by the most amazing conversation of my life, followed by the worst meal of my life, followed by a great conversation,
right.
And then so many flirtations, both
right.
Physically.
Well, there's that, right.
And intellectually,
right.
And emotionally, because so many people were talking about so many things. I was flirting with ideas.
Right.
And
no, that's
I
exactly
loved
what...
that conference for that reason.
Yeah.
It was just, it was intellectual foreplay.
Right.
And then...
That's what they call it, you know, intercourse.
Yes.
Like dialogue, intercourse.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Intercourse and discourse.
Right, exactly.
Intercourse and discourse, yeah.
Right.
So I had a fantastic experience. So I'm actually really looking forward to seeing what it's like, because the last time I attended this conference, it was 2005. It had a brief hiatus while they were looking for a host. They wait for a UC campus to step up to the plate and say, yes, we would love to have 1,000 queers here for the weekend. And
is that hard to find?
Apparently they've had some difficulties in the long run, because it's a major, like, the logistics of this are incredible. People are coming from all over. It's not just the UC system. It's actually representing the Cal State system, City College system, and many universities here just on the West Coast and the Southwest. So all of a sudden you have queers from Arizona, you've got queers from Southern California, Northern California, Oregon, right. Seattle, Washington. You have no idea where everyone's coming from.
Right.
And you have to put them all in one place, and they're all going to be talking about crazy things. It's a lot of work. I hand it to the organizers.
But it's really important to create queer community and,
yes.
and sex community, because I think so much of our stuff is in the closet and marginalized.
Yes.
I mean, there's so many people that are like, oh, no, you can't say that on the radio. You can't do that. But, you know what I mean? All that stuff.
You can't
You
do
can't
that
print
on television.
That on the internet.
Internet. No.
Absolutely. Yeah. I've been in Providence, where when I was actually visiting Megan one time previously, I went to the adult section of the Providence Public Libraries, the adult section. They had a kids section and an adult section. I figured, you know, I would be able to get to my blog specifically because I was going to the adult section. Turns out, nope, my blog was censored in the adult section of the public library.
In the adult section, that's weird.
Yeah.
Censorship is really, really incredible. It's you start to feel important. I'm starting to notice that my website my website is being censored.
Yeah.
And congratulations.
It is getting a certain amount of dominant culture recognition when you're censored.
I have a dangerous ideologue.
That's
It's driving me crazy.
Yeah.
I've never felt so powerful in my life until I was censored. But
that's
it's
right.
annoying, though, because then you're like, now I'm reaching slightly less.
I actually got really interested in censorship on the internet because I worked with the San Francisco homeless shelter system. And I didn't realize how severe sexual censorship was until I was doing an HIV training, and I was trying to facilitate not only HIV 101 skills, but also research skills. I wanted to try to pass on information about how one evaluates a source. How do you determine how accurate it is, how inaccurate it is? Because in the homeless system, you're working with people who did not get to have a formal education in the same way. It's always been interrupted. So these are skills that many people take for granted. How do you evaluate a sexual source that is going to be biologically, medically accurate? Language is changing constantly. Right. If you look at something, we're using different terms, moving above and beyond. So I wanted to show that. And one of the questions I asked was, I did this with an internet scavenger hunt, I called it. I asked questions. I was trying to implant as many keywords one would search for with a question and said, I know you don't have the answers to any of this. They're very complex. Mm-hmm. I want you to go use Google and tell me what you find. Mm-hmm. And every single person in the shelter came back and said, you set us up. You're wasting our time. They're calling me names. They're very angry. And I'm thinking, all right, patience. It's a teaching moment. I'm teaching people how to use Google. It's a harder skill to learn than you might think, especially if you've never had a computer. I realized that
the library staff is not letting the homeless people use the computers or something.
Right. Well, there's that problem. But in the shelters, it's so censored because they're so afraid of pornography. Every sexual keyword is blocked. And the question I'd noticed that this was important for was, especially in an HIV regard, I asked, what is PEP? And how do you get it in the city of San Francisco?
Post-exposure
prophylaxis. This is a type of medication, if you've had a high-risk exposure to HIV, that you can initiate. You have about 72 hours. An infection has not taken place, but an exposure has. There is something
which means the virus is inside but it's not inside the
cells.
T-cell yet.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's looking to actually get a stronghold, and it takes, you know, just like conception doesn't happen
instantly.
Right, it has
to actually get into one of your white or your...
It's looking for
it can reproduce and then become a problem.
Yeah, it needs to find
So you could actually prevent it
you
from
can
even,
prevent an infection.
Even after an exposure.
And this was of personal note for me because I did some grant work in Africa and I had an accidental needle stick. I'd been working in HIV for 5 years. I was in Africa for about a week and a half and I had a needle stick accident. Absolutely terrifying. I'm also negotiating my health care in Swahili. I'm not that confident in my Swahili. If I had not had a background in HIV, I think I would have been terrified.
Just
they didn't even
it.
Have modern medication. I actually got AZT.
Oh, wow.
I got straight up AZT. So PEP is something I take seriously because it is preventing infections. It is making a change.
Right.
And people in a shelter system are in some of the highest risk demographic, and they have the least resources.
Right. Were they able to find it? Were they able to answer the question that you
the
asked?
The entire search string was blocked.
The search
Literally,
string?
The
oh
search string came up with a window that said the firewall is preventing this search. It is an unacceptable adult search because all of the pages about post-exposure prophylaxis included words like anal sex.
Right.
Gosh. See, that's what's so interesting I find about censorship, because it's almost like slang. The censorship itself will almost create new slang, right? People
Correct.
Who work around the censorship, socially speaking, kids do this, right? You know, oh, is that what kids are calling it these days? That is an evolution of language to avoid, whether it be technical
yes.
censorship on Google, or whether it be, oh, I don't want my parents knowing that I'm talking about this.
I don't want my parents to know what I'm talking about this, but also when you're talking about health resources, we've banned the language that literally on Google will find the resources, but the porn that they're so worried about, you can find it a million different ways. So we're not keeping the porn out. We're keeping the good information
out. Not that
there's
anything wrong with porn.
No.
Well, but that's the thing. Just so the answer, I think the moral of the story is just say no to censorship, kids.
Say no
to censorship. Just say no.
Okay, so I'd like to thank May May from Kink on Tap, kinkontap.com.
Thank you, Monica.
Yeah,
this is awesome.
Thank you. And get Ned into your chair so we can talk about that PSI-gasm.
The PSI-gasm.
Okay, so what's a PSI-gasm, Maggie?
The PSI-gasm is actually a device that has been utilized by sex researchers for a very long time. This is going back in our lineage of sex information. It's not a new concept. It was something that I looked at in research, and I kept repeatedly running into the question, how is the university setting preventing people from learning about sex as it actually occurs? We don't study orgasms in their natural environment.
You're in a lab. You're asking people questions later.
There's a selection bias for the people that they're able to reach who are coming in to provide information about their orgasms.
People who are willing to talk about it.
People who are willing to talk about it.
And what they remember.
And people who are confident that they can have an orgasm in a laboratory setting.
Oh.
A lot of times.
I would not be confident that I could have an orgasm in a laboratory setting.
But you might be confident that you could have an orgasm in your home setting. But
right,
that is
with
actually.
My partner. As long as no one was paying attention too much.
Correct. Correct. Outside interference is a problem.
Exactly.
And so if we want to actually study a real-world spectrum of sexuality, we need to go where sex is happening. And right now, research is not happening in an objective scientific manner where you're looking at all kinds of data and you're processing it. It's not happening in real-world sexual environments. So the PSI-gasm, PSI stands for pounds per square inch, and it is monitoring the muscular contractions of the pelvic floor, the pelvic muscles.
Because when you have an orgasm, all the muscles in your pelvic floor contract, like dun 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 dun.
They're
dun.
All. It's basically it's a like muscular landslide. And an orgasm, I think a lot of people are having sex like they're having a seance. Like they're trying to bring the orgasm into the room, and they don't know. They're practicing rituals. They're reading the recipe. But they don't necessarily know what they're cooking. And it's because they've forgotten that the orgasm is the body. The orgasm
is the autonomic nervous system.
It's actually all over the body. You are having an orgasm from head to toe. And I think people forget that when we're talking about an orgasm, we're not talking about a spaceship that might land. We're not talking about a laser beam you might be able to hone in. You're talking about your body. And people can't troubleshoot their orgasmic process because they don't understand their body. They don't understand how the orgasm is connected to it. So people run into walls and it freaks them out because all of a sudden you're not having orgasms, you're not having arousal the same way, and you're not thinking, I just started a blood pressure medication. And actually, my blood pressure is very, very important to my arousal process. I need to get that blood down to my genitals. And if that blood's not getting there for whatever reason,
you're
going to have some trouble.
Or getting aroused or... All that
or stuff. Getting aroused. And that type of not knowing what's happening makes people feel very anxious. And it's something they can bring into their next sexual encounter, even though maybe we've changed that bodily situation. All of a sudden it's going,
I hope
happens last time doesn't happen this time.
Exactly.
I'm very worried about last time.
So I'd like to introduce your partner, Ned.
Ned has been my amazing partner. He's actually a technical genius. I could not build a PSI-gasm. I knew it was possible. But my partner is an amazing person.
When I started dating Maggie, she came up to me and was talking about these great ideas that she's been talking with you about. And she heard that I was studying physics and asked if I could create this device to measure the pelvic floor contractions as someone orgasms. And I thought about it and figured out
yes,
I could.
I can.
And was that the first date?
Pretty close.
First date.
Almost. Our first date, we were pretty sexual. Our second date, we were making porn together.
Really?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh,
pretty much.
So romantic.
She invited me to her company's Christmas party.
Oh, the armory.
Yes.
You went to the XXXmas party.
The day before New Year's Eve was one of our very first dates.
Right. Sweet. 08-09 New Year, wasn't
it?
That's
so romantic.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And so together you developed this tool that is both a scientific research tool and a dildo and measures your orgasm.
Yeah. Yeah, so you can insert it in yourself and you masturbate or have sex.
And where do you insert it?
I prefer places in the anus because
back hole.
Back door, yes, indeed.
Back hole versus front hole. Not everyone has a front hole, but everyone's got a back hole.
Exactly, because I've tried this a few times, and you know it's important that men can do it too. And I learn a lot just from looking from the first few graphs of my orgasm. I can immediately tell from the graph where the orgasm is, how long it lasted, and the frequency with which my ass was contracting.
Right, because all the muscles in the pelvic floor contract, not just your whatever.
Exactly.
Oh, a lot.
All of them do, probably in different ways. I'd like to measure the different ones specifically. But what I'd be really interested to do is to compare the graphs I'm looking at from my own orgasm with all the other people I know.
Right.
With the women I know, with the trans people I know,
ooh,
with the kinky people, with the vanilla people.
People who are having non-genital orgasms, like people who are having mind-gasms and
fame-gasms. Exactly.
Mind-gasms. Who come from their nipples or who only come from their clit and can't come from anything other than their clit. They may come differently.
Right.
And we haven't studied these things at all.
Oh, right.
It would be really fascinating to be able to open this up and get data from a really large...
More than 10 people.
Exactly.
Because
it's one thing.
Size.
Yeah.
I had Strap on Joe said she was a sample size queen.
Yes. But also people of different physical ability.
Right.
There's so many groups of people that we have desexualized that
people, elderly people.
That is the spectrum of sex.
Right.
And when you look at this data, I think one of the most interesting things about it is we're always talking about orgasms as a male orgasm or a female orgasm. What are the tips?
Why do we have to
What are your blowjob tips? Yeah. What are the cunnilingus tips? And we're all thinking of this as a black and white, two different types of things. And you really look at it and you realize there's no such thing as a male orgasm or a female orgasm. There is a human orgasm and it has a spectrum that it exists upon. And it has all kinds of variations. It's wonderful and it's beautiful, but it's not male or female. Your orgasm, you know, it's wearing whatever it wants. It's not pants or a skirt.
Right. So as you look at the graph that it's printing out for you, what do the contractions look like?
A lot of times when I'm looking at my graph, I'll see the base level of pressure increase continually as I'm getting close to orgasm.
Oh, okay.
So as the arousal builds...
So you get more tension in the pelvic floor.
Yeah, it just builds up and builds up and builds up. And then when I start to come, it'll release. And the level will drop a lot, and it'll just loosen up. And then after it loosens, it'll start contracting in a very regular way, about two or three times a second. And keep going up like that for about 10 seconds or so. And it's very distinctive. It's really easily recognizable. But I haven't looked at that many other graphs than me and a few other data that was published from a similar study in the 70s. I'd love to see more. And that's one of the places
I'm
going with this.
That's why we have friends. That's what sex geek potlucks are all about.
Yeah. Exactly. And we may not take the data in exactly the same way every time like they did in other studies, but we'll be able to study so many more different people.
And a longer term. Most of these studies are quick. They're a blitz. It's like, let's see what your orgasm looked like one time. Okay, now we're talking about orgasms.
Right.
And I don't know about anyone else listening, but I have all kinds of orgasms.
Yeah,
I come
every
differently.
Every orgasm is different.
Every orgasm is different. My situation changes
totally.
So it would be really helpful for me to be able to see what someone's orgasmic development is actually like.
Right. Well, that is so exciting. So people can find you at psigasm.net.
Or you can go and check out my website as well, missmaggiemayhem.com, missmaggiemayhem.com.
Exciting.
Or psigasm.net.
And many of the people I know that follow you on Twitter say it's very entertaining.
I love my Twitter followers. If you're my Twitter followers, I love you all.
Can I just ask a question?
Is it
.net because psigasm.com was taken?
No.
No.
We were doing the whole thing open source. And
that's such an inside techie joke. That's so adorable.
PSIgasm.net. Miss Maggie Mayhem and her partner, Ned, thank you so much for
coming on
the show.
Thank you so much, Monica.
Thanks so much for having us.
This is the Sex Geek Potluck. Next up, we have filmmakers Priscilla and Julianne. Priscilla is going to be talking about a very fascinating collaborative documentary called Sex Box.
And I'm just curious here, because Ned's here, and because Ned, you're a scientist, we have the Tenga double hole cup here.
The docking station.
The docking station. The
docking station.
And,
wow.
And I mean, you know, just because the show is a busy show tonight, and we don't want to have people running out to their cars to get their strap-ons, you know, in the name of science, Ned. And it might offend the reggae fest that they're having, but we might want to try this out later.
You think?
Are we allowed to do that?
I don't know. Maybe. Hmm.
I think we should.
I mean, in the name of science, don't you think?
Oh, that's hilarious. Oh, my God. I guess we could.
Well, we'll do that. Okay. Maybe we'll do that at the finale of the show.
Okay.
I mean, being the token straight guy for tonight.
Right, sure.
I mean, I don't think there's anything straighter than Ned and I putting
your penises in the same device and membranously
for science.
Docking
for
science. Just trying
for
out
science,
the Tenga thing. Okay, fantastic. So we have Priscilla from sexbox.com. Tell us a little bit more about the documentary Sex Box. You are filming in Sao Paulo, Berlin, Barcelona, and here in San Francisco.
Yeah, exactly. It's a collaborative project, mm-hmm. and all these filmmakers around the world are like collaborating together to create this investigation. We are doing like an investigation, what is sexuality today, and what's the knowledge and different cultures connect with sexuality and gender and relationships. And it's really like an eye on what's going on in the world today.
Right. It seems to me that San Francisco and Sao Paulo and Berlin and Barcelona do have a pretty sex-positive community in all of those four places.
Yeah, exactly. That's why we choose those cities.
Mm-hmm.
But also we see that not all these towns have really completely open, you know, there's
right.
a lot.
Even in the most sex positive
exactly.
of places, there's
yeah.
a lot of sex.
Even
negativity.
Here in San Francisco, we have some, and
yeah,
especially in like Latin culture, Sao Paulo and Barcelona, we figure there's a lot of more machismo and mm-hmm. sexism going
right.
on, and try to do the investigation.
We have sexism here in San Francisco.
Sure.
We do.
Yeah, like one of the questions we ask people is like about the natural gender pronounces,
mm-hmm.
and how we do that in language. We have like a Latin basic language because everything is male and female, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything, like a chair, is a girl,
mm-hmm.
you know,
and you sit on
exactly.
It.
How can we have a neutral gender pronounce?
Right.
With everything.
How can anything be neutral?
Exactly.
If everything is either masculine or feminine.
Exactly.
And how could you have like a transgender person, or how could you ever experiment with androgyny if you don't even have a word for it in your culture?
Exactly. So here we're like, oh, we go by day or zero, G, and mm-hmm. we're trying to like bring this to other cultures, but mm-hmm. so hard, and the language is really like, it's first like getting information and knowledge, and then like how we can bring this for other cultures if we don't have really the appropriate language to
right.
use it.
Right, absolutely. So why did you call it Sex Box?
Because we want to launch sexuality out of the box. I think we need to talk more about it, and we need to open this box and see what's going on inside.
What's in the box?
Exactly.
Cool.
And I was like naming everything, separating too much.
Right. And I wanted to tell everyone that it's SSEXBBOX. You can find it at sexbox.com with the two S's and the two B's. That's because of San Francisco, Sao Paulo, and then Berlin and Barcelona.
Exactly.
Isn't that right?
Yeah.
And you're doing something on March 23rd with Dossie Easton.
Exactly. She's doing a spoken board, and we're doing this fundraiser at Ariel.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it's going to be pretty cool. We have three DJs playing and some performance, and we're trying to raise money to this project.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I want to say is that it's an open source video project. So everybody who is interested in video and wants to get in touch with exploring sexuality through video can be part of Sex Box.
So you're letting other people submit their own
exactly.
like little clips, documentary
exactly.
clips to
exactly.
your Sex Box project.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh,
and
neat.
Also people who are really interested, they can create their own hubs in their cities. So Austin just created a new hub, and they're like sending us a lot of material from what's going on in that scene, you know?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
In that community. Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'll mention the Dossie Easton again here locally. It's March 23rd. Dossie Easton she wrote The Ethical Slut, Radical Ecstasy, which is about the combination of Tantra and BDSM. She's an amazing sex educator. So you say that she's going to be doing some spoken word on March 23rd, and it's at El Rio?
Exactly. Yeah.
Fantastic.
It starts
cool.
at 8 p.m.
Yeah, well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Priscilla. It's been great to have you.
Yeah.
So our other filmmaker in the room is Julianne Carroll. She did a film called Sex Workers, Your Voice Counts. Hey, welcome back to Sex Exploration with Monica.
Hi there. Thanks for having me again.
Yeah, my pleasure. So you've got an exciting event coming up in New York City with Sex Workers, Your Voice Counts.
Yeah, so it's called CineKink. Mm-hmm. It's a week-long sex-positive film festival. I think it's in its seventh or eighth year now. So the film is starting out a series of films about sex workers. It's on Friday night in New York City in the East Village.
And what is your film about particularly?
So my film came as a result of my master's thesis at San Francisco State. So I interviewed four women in San Francisco, current and former sex workers, and the focus of the film was really talking to them about their experiences of stigma and how they are redefining and reclaiming sex work for themselves.
Well, the whole point of calling a sex worker is because all the words that we have to describe sex worker are pejorative, like if you call them
exactly.
a prostitute or a whore or a hussy or a tramp or any of those things, like you call someone that and they're like, oh, how could you say that when actually... Okay, so the word whore came from the Dutch, mm-hmm. and it means lover. And prostitute means to stand or to stand in place of, like to stand in place of someone's lover. So your lover right. isn't around, so you seek, you know, someone else. So it's, I mean, it's only because sexuality and particularly owning your own sexuality as a mm-hmm. female that's so like.
And profiting from it, not yeah. only just owning it, but actually making your money off of it and making your living off of it.
Right, like being slutty is better than being a whore somehow because...
Now you're a woman with money, not just a woman with sexual power.
Because it's more likely to destabilize the hegemony.
Right.
It's more likely to question what the deal is with sex and religion and our culture.
Exactly.
As you're showing your film to people, what are some of the comments that you're getting, the feedback?
People ask all sorts of questions. People often ask how I found people. So it really wasn't very difficult to find people to participate in the film. There's a lot of sex worker activism here in San Francisco, and there are a lot of people who wanted to really tell their stories.
And was one of them Carol Queen?
Yes. So Carol Queen is one of our main characters, and she actually was three of the women. Two of them work at the Lusty Lady. Another owns her own bachelor party strip service. But Carol Queen was the only woman in the film who's actually worked as she called herself a call girl, so who's actually had sexual intercourse or sexual play for money. Mm-hmm. So that was really important in our film that we had someone speaking about that experience as well.
Right, because a lot of people differentiate between like some kinds of sex work where you don't actually...
Right.
Which, of course, there's also a legal line there, too. I mean, if you admit to having, you know, genital intercourse as a sex worker, that's the illegal part. You know?
Absolutely.
But also, you know, there's a lot of judgment and there's the whole cheating thing if your partner is, what, mm-hmm. you know, whatever, not open.
Yeah, and that's a really good point. So three out of four women who are in the film work as dancers, so they are technically legal according to the system. Mm-hmm. So it was much easier to find people who were doing legal sex work as mm-hmm. opposed to things that someone could go to jail for.
Yeah, for sure.
So, yeah.
Cool. Yeah, well, we're going to talk more about sex work in the show. A couple of different people. Eve Minax works as a dominatrix. She's going to talk about some of the classes that she's teaching. And Tahil, technically Tahil is a sex worker, even though I think most people wouldn't think of a guy as a sex worker and they wouldn't think of a guy mm-hmm. that teaches Tantra as a sex worker. But I mean, Tantra is all about, you know, sexual energy and how to move it through. And he also works as a healer and teaches other men how to be dakas. It's the sex geek potluck tonight. So we have so many different sex educators and filmmakers and whores and feminists having snacks.
Who are you calling a whore, lady?
Myself. And I mean it as a compliment.
We're wrangling up the rest of the crew.
Fantastic. We're also going to talk with Roland, who's doing My Big Fat Queer Friendly Puja, which is exciting.
Mm-hmm.
And it's PHAT, as Reed mentioned earlier. So thank you so much, Priscilla, for coming on. You can find her work at sexbox.com.
Exactly. Thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah, my pleasure. My pleasure. And thank you to Julianne Carroll. You can find her at julianelovesme.com. And will you spell your first name, Julianne?
Yes, it's Julianne.
Cool.
And the festival is CineKink in New York City.
Excellent.
Thanks.
And the film is Sex Workers, Your Voice Counts.
So how's the potluck going for you?
It's CineKink.
I was the producer for CineKink Chicago.
Oh, cool. My film's in CineKink next week.
CineKink in New York City.
Monica, okay. Monica, how's the potluck going for you?
It's going well. I'm having a radio show mostly.
Mostly a radio show.
Is
Did
radio.
You get any food?
Yeah. No, I don't eat food.
You don't?
No.
Do you sleep ever?
Sometimes, not too frequently.
Mm-hmm. I see.
But, okay. So, anyway, we have Eve Minax in the studio, and she is a sex educator and a dominatrix, and teaches many interesting classes about forced orgasm. Gherkin.
Merkin.
Gherkin.
Have you worn a merkin?
Oh, have I know have what you a merkin, worn a gherkin is. Does anyone know what it is?
I've stuffed a gherkin. Well,
then I have worn a merkin.
Okay, so a merkin. Does anyone know what a merkin is? A merkin is something
a merkin
that
is,
you...
I know what one is.
Go, Allie.
It's a vagina wig.
It is. It's like fake pubic hair when you...
Tipping the velvet in your merkin.
What is tipping the velvet?
Oh. I bet Allie knows the answer to that question.
Allie tipping the velvet. For 500.
Tipping the velvet. What is... British euphemism for cunnilingus.
Oh, okay.
Primarily in the 19th century, early 20th century, Victorian era.
But really, has cunnilingus changed that much since then?
How many velvets have you tipped, Bree?
Well, well, that's a question. Allow me to demonstrate with this Google algorithm.
Okay, so the reason that you would have a merkin is because you had to shave off your pubic hair because you had nits.
You had lice.
Right.
Yeah, well, that's a bummer.
So mm-hmm. That's why you'd have a merkin is right. You'd pretend like you hadn't shaved your pubic hair off.
Has anyone seen Spartacus?
And the you know what's the newest Spartacus? Rage in sexuality?
The jazzling?
Hair.
What, hair?
It's all the rage now. Growing your pubes back.
Seriously, I have,
it's
yeah,
become have quite the rage.
And do you know, this is actually a very interesting Darwinistic observation. Do you know why pubic hair is curly?
No.
Because if it was straight, it'd poke your eyes out.
Monica doesn't know what to do with that.
And cut to commercial.
Her merkin is really curling now.
You're listening to SEC Free Radio. Radio for the people, by the people.
Okay, so we have gotten out the docking station, as it were, and now we're playing with it.
Eve's got her hand all in my docking station. You're loosening up my docking
station.
I have
my hand in the tanga.
They were actually going to try it out
later. Did you advertise
that?
Yes. Well, they should. My hand is not dirty.
Yeah,
did
but
you wash your hands?
Hear it?
Wow.
Oh, yeah, it sounds like a wet fucking...
Well, I could say a cunt. Can I say a cunt on my
sure.
Be
but only
asshole.
Because you mean it in
actually,
a nice way.
Actually, if you fuck an asshole properly, look, it feels like a wet cunt.
You're tearing my docking station.
Oh, my God.
Only one side?
Well, yeah, but what if it's his side?
That's my. It's gonna be. You know, that's gonna be my side. We're gonna play rock paper scissors, Ned and I, and I'm gonna get that side, and it's torn and stretched out now.
Wow, well,
you're
really
fisting my docking station.
Oh, wow, you're gonna need a napkin.
See, this is why. Okay, this is why you shouldn't let dominatrixes dominatrices.
Are you co-hosting this show?
This
yes,
is why we
is.
Can't have nice things, Eve.
Oh, goody. I'm so glad Reed is co-hosting the show tonight.
Yeah.
That makes my hand even wetter.
I'm the token straight guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
No. You don't have to be straight to be the token straight guy. You only have to be different than me, and that's actually not too hard, especially if you're
token,
a guy.
Token.
And there's token straight guys that are girls,
I think I'll use him in a video parlor later.
I
need to play.
When Ned comes in,
you can't win if you don't play.
I'm using the other side.
That's true. Okay, so Eve Minax, ladies and gentlemen, is a professional domina. Do you want to explain the difference between dominatrix and domina?
No.
Okay.
That was a Phil Collins song, right?
Yes.
Domina.
Okay, so she works at...
Unzip my zipper and my jacket couldn't come off.
Domina.
Okay, I don't know what you guys are doing right now, but
you're too young.
I'm moving on to the part where we talk about sex.
You know what I'm talking about.
Okay, so now it's a sex geek potluck. Everyone's feeling quite giddy with all the communal
feelings.
Yes,
it's all
very, very hypnotic.
Getting together to talk about sex. So you teach classes about you. She's got
my
a very
hand.
Lubed up hand after fisting the tanga, and now they're sort of like. You know,
just communally sharing. Bonding.
SMArts.com is the website for where you teach
what
many
is,
of your classes. Dominant Art.
S in Sally, M as in Mary.
Dash arts.com. You teach
correct.
With Cleo.
Cleo
dominance,
Dubois. Cleo Dubois.
Intensives.
Correct.
Male dominance intensives. Female dominance intensives.
And couples.
But you have a male dominance couples. Intensive coming up.
We have a male dominance intensive coming up indeed in March. Basically, we like working with people who want to explore their sexuality in a more, let's say, rigorous and or...
conscious?
Conscious, intentional, fashion. But also, I like to think of sexuality as a spectrum.
Sure.
Right? I like to use the analogy of soup. So some people really enjoy consommé, and they want their consommé, like a nice broth, every day.
And
every
consommé day, all day. Is a thin broth.
It's a thin broth.
Right?
It's like a very lovely broth.
Chicken
and it's
broth
a basis
or
for.
Okay.
I don't like Many the term vanilla. I do not like the term vanilla. Let's just put that out there.
Okay.
People use this term. It's like, oh, well, I'm just vanilla.
Vanilla
or
people.
Other people are like, oh, there's vanilla people. Separation.
Did you say the consommé?
Consommé, yeah.
So
what I would
like
say is
simple.
That there are some people who enjoy
nice
simple
about
food.
Simple sex, you know.
And mm-hmm. then there are those
nice
who like a little minestrone on Thursdays.
A couple of noodles in there every now and then.
Right.
A couple of pieces
right.
of carrots.
A dumpling.
Then there's those cream of mushroom people.
Oh, my God. Want to break an egg in there and then like put everything in the soup all at the same time and then put it in the blender.
But only on Saturday, right?
And serve it cold.
And so the SM people, a lot of times they like a variety. And sometimes they like to be very specific about how their variety is.
Well, people have like dominance, for instance, sometimes don't ever be submissive. Or sometimes they only want to do certain things and... That's not the point you were making.
No, that wasn't. But that's very cute, Monica.
Who are
you
the
can
people
continue
that,
with that idea
who are the
if
people,
you want.
Who are the people that like their soup in that hollowed out bread thing?
Does that have something to do with sexuality? Are there people who have sex
it's
in
your
a
analogy.
Bread?
I'm just asking.
Okay. Well, it could be a pineapple. It could be a bread bowl. It could be anything.
Sure.
I think that
oh,
that
you
those
know,
people...
she does actually do a class where
yes, I
you
do
food. No, food and sex. Like you cover people in chocolate sauce. Or honey.
Right. That's called splashing or splunging.
Splooching?
No, splunging. Splorching?
Splunging.
Yeah, that's the past pluperfect of to splunge.
Awesome. And so splunging is like when you, is specifically when you like cover yourself in something and it's sexual and then you roll around in it.
Right. And so some people find that to be very erotic for the act in and of itself. And then other people need to have somebody do it to them and other people need to do it to others. And then some people like it all, like me.
And you also do stuff like playing with food, feeding people things,
yes,
and
I
like a whole erotic meal. And
there's a great video done by a Quebecois guy, and I can't remember the name of it, but it's about feeding, and it's about this actual fetish of where you need to feed the other person so that they grow.
Oh, I've
physically.
Heard about that. Like, so they gain weight.
Indeed.
It's like stuffing.
It's kind of like a faux gras yeah. approach.
Yes.
Except for with your partner.
If I say it's really loudly in the microphone, is that going to be really...
It's annoying, yes, and it could lose us some listeners, and we only have three
Hello,
right
listeners.
Now.
We only have three listeners?
No, I'm just kidding. But anyway, don't piss them off. Be nice to them.
Oh, poor listeners. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, be nice to them. You have to talk about sexy, fun things now.
How about something nice? How about like mommy play?
Mommy play.
I will
okay,
take
yes.
care of you. I will feed you.
Yeah.
I will spank you. I will hold you in my court.
And
I love you.
She can pop your cherry.
Oh, yes, I can.
Yeah.
Cherry popping mama.
Yeah.
Oh, you're so smart, Monica. Thank
well,
you.
I like to connect. You have so many different classes that there's so many different things to talk about.
Variety is the spice of life.
And so what
Isn't
are some
it,
of
Reed?
The cherries
it
that
is.
You have popped over the course of your tenure as a cherry popping mama?
I can't think of any cherry that I have not popped.
Oh, come
if
now.
If there's a listener out there right now who's not had their cherry popped, please contact me because I can't think of a cherry I haven't popped right now. So
okay.
name one.
Well, I mean, you're talking about like so, areas of cherries, not people's cherries. I mean, we could. There are cherries of mine you have not popped.
This is true, but you have
Wait,
to
you
be
mean
willing
you
to... Oh, my God, I've opened the door. I cannot close now.
Okay, so what we mean is something that you haven't tried before, right?
Correct.
Oh, no.
So, like, something that you haven't done before that you might
something
want
you haven't
to
done
try.
Before, so it could be... I mean, honestly, it doesn't have to be about being a recipient. You could be a giver.
Right, like the first time you've ever given someone anal sex or something.
Correct. I can help arrange that.
Thank you.
So you're like a concierge of...
I'm a concierge.
Of yes. sexual experiences.
Of sexual experiences.
Of consommé.
And let's define
If you like
sex,
a consommé.
Because you're not just talking about penis, vagina, intercourse. You're talking about, like, any...
Oh, yeah. Primarily not about penile vaginal penetration. PVP, we like to call that.
PVP.
Right.
Penis, vagina, penetration.
Penile. vaginal penetration.
Yes. Sounds serious.
Well, it sounds pretty normal.
Well, and there's so many other ways to have sex, but many people define sex as only that.
Correct.
Like, if you're a virgin, most people think, oh, well, you haven't had penis-vagina intercourse, but you could have had, say, butt sex or something.
Correct.
If you're Catholic, they oftentimes will say, oh, I'm not going to have PVP.
Or the hand job, or the blowjob. I mean, these things are beautiful arts and crafts of loving, caring, giving souls that create. I'd like to talk about the spirituality of sexuality.
Goody. Okay.
When you're in a moment with a person and you're exchanging erotic energies with that person, it does not have to rely on penile vaginal penetration at all. And yet it can still be highly erotic and highly sexual.
Yeah.
And it can bring a lot of cathartic release, not just release in the terms of ejaculation or orgasm, but release of the soul. Like, here you are. You've been indoctrinated in your entire life to not feel your body. You've not been encouraged to express your sexuality, express your worth as a primal being. You've, on the contrary, been discouraged from that and taught to layer yourself with layers and layers and layers. Let's say a clothing analogy. Or if we went back to the soup one, you know, so the soup is either you're going for a spicy soup because it's too much to have just the plain basic, or it's just basic, basic,
or
basic.
Or you don't have the attention to feel it. Do you know what I mean?
Well, you haven't been encouraged to do so, right.
And you've habitually, it's because it's also about your unconscious nervous system.
Exactly.
You have habituated to only this kind of sensation, so you're kind of trapped.
Right.
And so when you broaden your base of sexual soups that you're into, it really gives you more freedom, but it also makes it about your whole person. Like, you can be the sexual person and it's not just about this one persona.
Correct.
Let's talk a little bit more about that, because we're also going to talk to Tahil and Roland, which is more about the sacred side of sexuality. And I think people would particularly think that how could BDSM be sacred? Or, you know, how is it not always about sex, penis, vagina, intercourse? So let's talk a little bit more about that, because I think that's really freeing when you can have sex with your whole body rather than just your genitals.
I just had an article published in a book called Sacred Kink, edited by Lee Harrington. My piece is about psychic waste management, which is uncovering those layers of shame and fear and vulnerability. And I think what SM can bring to people who seek initially, sometimes they seek to feel themselves again, their bodies. It's a very physical, so that they'll get whipped into catharsis, right? But that catharsis and that whipping is about uncovering layers of psychosexual oppression, if you will. When you get down to the meat of the matter, the heart of the soul, that person then becomes this vulnerable being who can just relinquish. And that's where I think the sacred part comes in, because it's not, it looks like maybe from the outside person that, oh, they're just being whipped, or they're just being beaten, or they're just being put into control or restraint. But if one can actually see past that and see how they're being uncovered as a vulnerable being, as we all are, we are all vulnerable beings who seek connection with another human being. Mm-hmm. Or seek connection with the divine, if you will.
So how does being a dominatrix connect you with this divine energy?
I just am. It's not about...
Like, you don't have to reconnect to it. You already are connected.
That sounds a little pompous to say. So I won't go there. But I would say that I'm lucky to facilitate other people in reaching that state of ecstasy.
Right.
And reaching that state of...
Kind of like a BDSM shaman kind of thing, sexual.
Yeah.
I like that. That sounds good. You could be BDSMshaman.com.
As far as professional work goes, one of my exquisite forms of being there for people is to offer them a safe space. And I think that's what sacred sexuality is about, is having a safe space for that vulnerability, that openness to the soul, that connectedness to a higher power, if you will.
Right.
And it's not about God or religion, but it is a little bit spiritual, a lot spiritual.
It seems a lot spiritual, especially if it's about stripping your ego away to the essence of who you are and being about your life energy and your power, even when it's your power in being vulnerable.
Well, all the more so. I think that in society, shame is very much advocated. Like, we are to be ashamed of our feelings, of our sensations, of our fantasies, of our ways of working through the world. And so these layers go up, and you're supposed to be a man, you're supposed to be working and making a living, and a woman's supposed to be doing, and contemporary women are supposed to be not only making a living, but they're supposed to be being sexual and hiding their sexuality simultaneously.
Yeah,
right?
Right, yeah, totally.
Right. And so when you're in that safe space, all of that goes away. It gets stripped. You can just be. And so exactly, the ego is gone. You're in the id space, if you will, if you want to talk in psychoanalytic theory. You're letting go of what I'm supposed to be, what one is supposed to be, and you're just being.
So people can find more about you at mistressminax.com. And you also have your own video blog, right? Welcome
yeah.
to my parlor.
Yeah. That's actually a side project that's very much on the side right now.
Uh-huh.
But I have a new project, which is just basically eveminax.com.
Cool.
And that's where my education, counseling, and caring for people is coming from. So I have a new website.
Cool.
Yeah.
Oh, and bondage dinner. So
yes.
You may or may not be able to do the March 4th bondage dinner, and that's okay because I'm excited about the bondage ball
well,
no matter what.
Or April. We're going to
maybe April
decide. Yeah, for sure. It's
yeah.
going to be one of the two of those. Yeah, for sure.
Excitement. So the bondage dinner is four-course dinner, fancy
we
aerial
love
and art performances.
The bondage
it's
dinner.
So
the
fun.
Supper club is so fun.
Yeah. And I'm excited to hear, is your bondage ball is like a rubber ball.
It's a rubber ball that gets inflated, and
it's like a hamster
you put the person
ball.
Inside
kind
the
of.
Ball, so they're completely immobilized
mm-hmm.
by rubber and by air. And in that ball, they can, in my mind, reach an ecstatic state. I don't know about on a supper club floor, but I think they can, personally.
We'll give it a shot.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. No, definitely.
And you'll want someone in there that is able to reach ecstatic
states. I think I'm going to actually
probably, huh?
work with an Art Deco theme and have it be artistically beautiful and have the person, the initial person, be someone who's inclined towards transcendence. But I'm very much open to having
bondage ball rides.
Audience members
excitement.
Coming in, as long as they don't have any sharp jewelry.
Oh, sure.
Because I could pop the ball.
Yeah, oh, totally.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
Cool. Well, Eve Minax, you can find her at evemenax.com. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Monica.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, always a pleasure.
Cheers.
So it's easy to move over to the sacred side of spirituality. Often, and I have to start these interviews by saying, how can, in a culture where we live so often shaming sexuality, saying that being openly sexual is wrong, how can sex and spirituality be the same? But we've had a wonderful dominatrix-driven explanation of how the sacred and the sexual can be together. So I'll introduce Tahil. He does DACA training, and we were just wondering, what exactly is the definition of DACA?
It's basically a master of bringing forth the sacred into the world around you. It's basically, from that culture, a priest. But from the tantric perspective in India, sexuality was not something to be shunned from the sacred.
Mm-hmm.
So it just became part of it, which is what we're talking about today, you
mm-hmm.
know, sacred sexuality. But for me, it's less about the sex and more about the intimacy. Because what I really make a stand for is empowering people to stay connected. There's a lot of disconnection from human to human out there.
Oh, absolutely.
And there's a lot of, when people ask you, how are you doing today?
They actually, you always say fine and you don't even listen to the answer.
They actually don't mean it. So some of the simple trainings that we do at my school is when somebody says something, we actually ask them to breathe that in, to actually feel that, to reclaim feeling, to reclaim sensation. Because basically we're walking around frozen.
Emotionally unavailable.
Emotionally unavailable, intellectually unavailable. We're just unavailable to be vulnerable with other people.
Right, so, because vulnerability is supposed to be bad in our culture.
It's something that
is... It's not
is,
masculine.
Right. It's not celebrated.
Right.
It's not honored.
And vulnerability can be openness.
It could be openness, and it's also about privacy and dignity. So it's really more about timing.
Hmm.
For me, sacredness means that you're in a state of presence. And presence means that you're flexible in between transparency and privacy. In a culture of men, there are culture to be more private. In a culture of women, there are culture to be more transparent.
Mm.
But the secret is to be able to be fluid and flexible, to go between the two. For me, part of being sacred means that you're not attached to one or the other, and that you have good timing and good discernment to go where you need to go.
It's all about, like, healthy boundaries. It's the same sort of thing. Like, you can choose what you want in and what you want out. I mean, sometimes people just build walls. Like, I've been hurt, and so I'm just going to build a wall so that I'm safe. But then nothing comes in, not even the good stuff. But when you can really discern and be flexible, then you have a range of options.
Exactly. In order for you to be sensitive, you need to be able to have that timing. A lot of us have been kind of like turned upside down. So where we should have privacy, we have transparency. And where we should have transparency, we have privacy.
So what do you mean by that? In just, what ways? Should we have transparency that we don't, do you think?
Well, for one thing, when we're transparent to somebody that doesn't own and understand our path, our way of being, and they don't know how to hold what we are sharing with dignity, sacredness, a sense of respect, then what ends up happening is a lot of times we get re-traumatized or re-wounded where we're really seeking healing.
Right.
So it's important to have that sense of understanding who you're sharing with. And a lot of times, especially in a culture of transformation, people share too much without having a discernment about who they're sharing it to.
Right, totally.
Right?
And totally, because they're just going through it. They're like on the bus and they're la-la-la-la, all this garbage from my past. And you're like, wow.
And then sometimes people have been hurt and they shut down. And they don't trust anybody.
Not even their intimate partner.
Right. So they can know somebody for 10, 20 years that are sleeping next to them, that are having sex with them. And all of a sudden, when they're out with some friends, all of a sudden they hear a side of their partner that they've never heard before.
Right.
How does that happen? Because something in that dynamic allowed that vulnerability to finally open.
Right. And so that's the work that you're doing with DACA training, is that you were going through the chakras, which, you know, the red chakra is the root chakra, and it has to do with your sense of belonging and tribal sense, right?
Right.
And then the wounds going all the way through the chakras, all the way up through
the seven
communications
chakra.
And right. Your brain and all of the different colors.
We build a brotherhood, you know, because I found that when men go to tantric events, they notice all the women in the room.
And then they don't really want to relate with the dudes.
Well, they don't notice the other guys.
Right.
A lot of them have found they went to the same workshops, but they never knew each other.
Right.
Because they never took the time to get intimate and connected.
Mm.
So one of the first things that I tackle and take on the first chakra is homophobia. And I learned this.
Amen.
I learned this because I'm a straight man, and I actually started working in my sexual healing practice on men.
Mm-hmm.
And what I found is that all these gay boys were complaining about their partners,
uh-huh.
homophobia.
Oh.
And I had this flash of transformation.
Internalized homophobia, right?
Right. So what I found is that homophobia is not a gay straight thing.
Right.
It's a guy thing. And so
it's a human thing. It's part of our culture.
Well,
it's unconscious training about our culture.
That shift in me is what I passed on to the guys. And I found a tremendous shift in the brotherhood. Because once they started to own it and start to look at it, frankly and honestly, if they had interest in men, own that. And if they weren't, own that. But the moment there's an ownership there, the first chakra opens up and men were able to have intimacy and connection with one another. And are
without
actually
punching each other in the arm.
Well, in our culture, the only way men are allowed to have intimacy and connection is through sex and violence.
Or sports.
Sex and violence.
Right.
So because of that limited vocabulary around touch and around intimacy, when we have something called human connection circles, where we train how to have empathy and understanding across the gender wall between men and women, and we translate man talk into woman talk into man talk, so that there's a dialogue that's to be had so that we have more understanding with one another.
Sure. No, I mean, I think that's a big deal, especially with ending the gender wars, like trying to figure out what are we each talking about to each other. And you also do this really great thing called the bliss wave that I would love for you to describe to our listeners, because it sounds so good. Although I'm imagining it's kind of freaky too. It's, you know, like five guys with one woman.
So the bliss wave is something that I developed over the last 20 years of doing massage. I actually started massage school when I was in eighth grade.
Wow.
What I found is that light soft touch creates a stimulating effect, and slow heavy touch creates a sedating effect.
Right, because you have to relax into a harder touch, and as you're lightly stimulating things, the nerves get all like, ah.
You got it. So what I do is I alternate many different massage styles between the light, soft, fast touch and the hard, slow, deep touch.
And so you have all of these five guys alternating at the same time.
Yes.
And how do they know? Do they communicate? Do you just say, okay, switch? But you probably wouldn't do that because that's not so relaxing.
They've been trained for the last 2 years. The first year, they work on the wounds of men along the chakra system. And the second year, they start working on the hands-on, hands-in work. And really, the training is internal. So they work with things like desires, fears, and boundaries. They work with timing, which is all about, for me, timing is about presence. It's that sensitivity and flexibility that I was talking about earlier between transparency and privacy, and learning how to time the contraction and expansion. Every contraction has a peak. Every expansion has a peak.
Oh, my God. This is reminding me of the PSI-gasm. You know, our contractions on orgasm. I'm just saying, okay, but go on.
Well,
so contractions and expansions
life,
and vibrations and breathing.
All of life is orgasmic. Everything is contracting and expanding.
Uh-huh.
And if you have good presence, you have good timing, and you learn how to harness the contractions and expansions. And for me, the orgasm of intimacy is gratitude. And the more you practice this state of
wait, hang on. The orgasm of intimacy is gratitude.
Right.
Yum! That's awesome. And that's totally creating the feedback loop that actually makes love bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. You're like, I love you. You're so awesome. Oh my God, you're so cuddly. I just want to face off.
It's the calling card that you're doing something right.
Oh, that's right. And then you can feed it back to your partner, not by staying silent, but by saying it.
And the studies show that couples that have more appreciations than complaints to one another actually have a longer lifespan for longevity in their connection. So everything's lining up to working on being more vulnerable, more intimate, more connected, more flexible between contraction and expansion. And really, if you practice
that... Right, and not being attached to either contraction or expansion, right?
Right.
Not
and if you
stuck.
Practice that in your life, it extends into the body. The more you're living it, the more it extends into the massage. And so these men are learning how to do that all together in unison.
Cool.
And they're getting feedback from the women.
And how do they know what to do and when to do it?
How do they know what
they
to do?
Feel?
I want to know how long is the line of women waiting to get in on this? Because this is like the best kept secret of the 21st century as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. Ironically, it's actually women are great networkers. So once we do a lot of this by word of mouth. So when women are experiencing this, we ask them, can other women call them? Can they write a small little letter about this? And we particularly focus on women who work on men. Because it's my vision to transform the industry of
sex-positive culture.
Oh, like
something to give back to sex workers, because they do experience a whole lot of sex worker burnout and energetical tiredness.
Well, what I found, working in the Brotherhood of Men, is that a lot of men got injured because they were seeking help and healing around the sex-positive in their sexual issues.
Right.
And they'd go to women, and women had their own issues.
Right.
And it would just be this perpetual cycle.
Right.
So,
and then, of course, there are money issues involved, and then there's intimacy and issues involved.
So many wounds, which is why we started the Human Connection Circle, where we have that bridge of compassion and understanding across the gender wall. Because a lot of it just has to do with misunderstandings.
Right.
Both sides want to be heard, felt, and seen, and there's no way out. So they... You know, there's no translation of man talk to woman talk, woman talk to man talk. And, you know, we have a culture that educates men and women differently, regardless of your biology. You have...
It's an entire culture that's different.
What gets confusing is that there's different... Like, you go into... Like, women go into the corporate world, and they're taught how to speak like men.
Right.
And then it's confusing, right? Or you have men that go into things like I did, like massage or yoga, and I start to have a language around, like... If you ask me something about massage or yoga, I'm going to start talking like a woman. I speak womanese.
Oh, really?
Right?
That's hilarious.
And
you
so,
just switch right over.
Right. And so there, what I call womanese is like there's a spiral to a point. And manese is more about direct.
Oh, interesting.
Right?
Sure.
So it's just a different way the culture educates us in vocabulary.
In communicating.
And the other distinction that I found is that men tend to have less vocabulary around sensitivity and emotions.
Sure.
And women have less vocabulary around power. and strength.
Mm.
So when I'm educating women, I usually catch them in saying things like maybe, could be, possibly, mm-hmm.
I think,
a little bit.
In my opinion.
Right. Like there's no.
I'm not sure, but.
Right. The vocabulary is not trained for ownership of
right.
their power.
Sure.
Right? So I encourage men to empower the women in their life to speak more with power and strength. And I encourage women with the men in their life to teach them the vocabulary of sensitivity and emotion.
And vulnerability.
Right.
Cool.
So, like, one of the biggest challenges for men is the F word, right? You will rarely hear a man say, I'm afraid.
Oh.
What you will say, what they'll say is, yeah. I'm concerned.
Afraid, sure, fear.
I tell women, if your man is saying, I'm concerned about something, no, he is terrified.
He's saying, I'm afraid, and he, even to get up to the point of admitting it has been some sort of, it means he's quaking.
If you have a group of men getting together, one of the first things they talk about is that they can't share their fears.
Mm-hmm.
So they talk about it through heroic stories where they could have epic battles and men can commiserate with a grunt or mm-hmm. a moan. And there's a lot that's transferred through that process.
And the punching in the arm thing, that's very important.
The punching in the arm, I don't know about that, but... It, like I said, the only two avenues that men are given in our culture is sex and violence. So right. if the only way I'm going to get intimate with my buddy is to punch him in the arm, if that's the only option I have, that's all I've been trained,
right.
then I'll take it.
Right.
So sure. our job is to extend possibilities.
So how can people find more information about DACA training? You said that that was at bigwarmth.com. Is that right?
Yes.
Okay, so bigwarmth.com, and then the five guys doing the bliss wave massage, that's at the DACA Spa Clinic, which is at 431 30th Street in Oakland. Yes. Sounds very exciting.
And what we do there is we demystify what we do as DACAs for women, and all my men have been trained in how to pamper a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So you come in, and you come in with some of your girlfriends, and you get a foot bath. You get two men working on your hands, two men working on your feet. And at the end, you get a facial with a profound effect with a Julique line. I don't know if you know what Julique is, but
not
it's one of the top lines
okay,
in facials.
Okay, it's a nice facial product.
Basically,
okay,
if you put it on, if you get a facial with it, you actually want to eat it.
Oh, really?
Because it's all
oh,
organic and
oh,
it's
sure.
all natural ingredients.
All natural, cool. Okay. Yeah. And so in this process, what do women say at the end of it?
Typically, the responses that we get is that they usually have tears in their eyes, and they say, thank you so much for having me reclaim the trust in men. You know, they've
right, because there's so much wounding across men and women, and it's the gender war.
It is so rare that they had a group
trust.
Of... like most women feel apprehensive and scared when there's a group of men around them.
Sure.
So there's a natural sense of apprehension when there's a group of men about to be touching them.
Yeah, five men on one right. woman, it seems scary a little bit, actually. But if
but,
you...
by the time
you know,
each man... So the way it's set up...
starts with a massage and maybe it's okay.
Well, each man approaches the woman and talks about desires, fears, and boundaries.
Sure.
Coaches her about what's going to happen. And we have a unique way of dealing with the body. So we ask the woman where in her body that if somebody touches their whole body would melt.
Cool.
So that's her safe spot, right? And then we ask where in her body where if somebody touches her whole body would freeze up.
Right.
So that would be the guardianship and the contraction part is what sets the pacing.
Oh, cool.
So we use something of a shamanic voice where we animate the part that's contracted and we ask it, if that part can talk, what would be the pacing in the massage? And by
awesome.
The time all this stuff happens, there's a kind of ease and relaxation. Each
sure.
man does this before they lay the hands on this woman. And by the time the massage starts, which is more like Tai Chi, it's more like a dance on a body. They're all well choreographed to do together. And there's this rhythm that happens. And by the time it's all done, she is putty on that table.
That's
and
fun.
And she gets up and she looks like she just went through a transformation.
Cool. And so as you're teaching guys how to be a DACA, then they kind of go on to do their own work in the world. And that brings us to Roland.
Hello.
You are one of the DACAs that Tahil has trained.
Yes.
Do you also work at the DACA Spa Clinic?
Absolutely, yes. We're still going through the training. And also, it's just fun to be in a room with five men working on a woman and the energy and what we see transform.
Mm-hmm.
So even if I wasn't actually in the class, I'd be there anyway.
Oh, cool. So as you are kind of going through your DACA training, you've gotten some ideas on some projects that you've developed your own project.
I take lessons from Tahil, and he's taught me a lot about the way you communicate, the way you communicate with men and with women, the way to slow down so that you can really feel what's going on, and getting the person that you're talking to slow down. So I've learned those techniques. I've also studied with other tantric teachers. So I have a bunch of different tools. One of the things that I've been doing is the pujas, which are basically like a mini adoration. You take 2 or 3 minutes per person in the room.
So a puja is like a rotational kind of tantric meditation thing, right?
It can be.
Where you kind of go around the circle.
Yes, or go around the circle, or you can do it in a line or groups. It's done different ways with different people.
And you have a whole new way of doing a puja.
What I've done is I've invited queer and queer-friendly people to come together, as opposed to most of the pujas I go to. It's like all the men have to be straight and all the women can be bi.
Right. And the men only work with women, and then the women can work with women sometimes.
Right.
But, you know, men don't want to work with each other because they're like, homo cooties on them. And they're just meditating, what I understand, because there's kind of a big deal to be called gay in our culture.
But it's challenging. I mean, Tahil had said he had the chance to work with gay men as a straight man.
Mm-hmm.
It can be challenging for people. For me, I'm bi, and I work on men, I work on women. I can connect emotionally with both men and women, and it doesn't really bother me.
Well, Tantra, we do say that it's mostly about sex, but we also say that sexual energy is chi, is life force.
Yes.
In every moment, when you're really present with someone, if you're really paying attention with them, they can be your divine beloved, even if you're just talking to them, even if you're just being with them, just recognizing their spirit. Who cares what their sexuality is?
Absolutely.
And so Roland is doing this project called My Big Fat Queer-Friendly
Puja.
I'm really proud of him, because one of the things I make a stand for with my guys is to take what their frustration and complaint is in the world and making it a reality. Can you tell a little bit about some of the people that showed up?
Well, yes. We had one woman who's in a poly relationship, and we also had a female-to-male transgendered woman with his lesbian girlfriend.
Cool.
So, and it was great, absolutely. And I would just like to expand that. And so I invite queer people, queer-friendly people, straight people who are curious about what a puja is all about, just to come. I mean, it's just about a 2 or 3 minute adoration with every person in the room. You can have all your boundaries respected, and yet you can get as intimate with all the people in the room as you're willing to go.
And it's eye contact and being
breathing,
present
yes.
with that person.
Yes.
Cool.
And there is some hands-on if that's within your boundaries. So there is.
But everyone defines what their boundaries are.
Exactly.
So if you don't want to be touched on your face, that's okay. If you don't want to be touched at all, that's okay. But it's all about like making healthy boundaries. And
yes.
Cool.
I just want to say one more thing before we finish up here. One of the things that I term sober loving.
Sober loving?
Right. Because there's something about the sacred sexuality world where the eye gazing, the breathing together, the moving together, these are all very hypnotic effects.
Mm.
In fact, NLP has a lot of this technology that it uses.
Totally, how you get in rapport with someone.
Right, it creates a mind meld.
You can just mimic their posture.
Right. And this.
Take a drink with them at the same time.
This is why
tricks.
I focus a lot on presence, center, and balance, and the flexibility and the sensitivity to go one way or the other, because it's easy to get hypnotized or enticed by the person that's in front of you.
Mm-hmm.
And in these pujas that Roland is doing, it's working on creating more of that sobriety, that sense of presence, so that you don't get snared into judgments, opinions,
and projections about
projections
who they are. Like, you're
else.
Like, oh my God, you're the most amazing angelic being I've ever seen.
Yes.
You're like, okay, actually you're a human being and I'm present with you as a real human.
And this is where Tantra can become profound, because all the areas that have been creating illness in our culture around projections, judgments, and opinions could start getting healed.
Right. Cool. Oh. Well, thank you so much. You can find Tahil at bigwarmth.com, and the DACA Spa Clinic is in Oakland.
I just wanted to...
Please.
I just wanted
this
to,
is Roland again.
Yes, I just wanted to say that the Big Fat Queer Friendly Puja, they should be on the Terra's Temple website on their calendar. The next one will probably be on a Friday, April 15th.
Terra's Temple.
Yes.
Awesome.
Great. Thank you.
Well, great. Yeah, thanks, Roland. This episode of Sexploration with Monica has been the sex geek potluck. So we have sex educators and sex workers and tantras and dakas and dominatrixes and documentarians. Exactly. And Tessa was just there and was going to say something about sex worker positivity. There she is.
Sex worker positivity. I think what I'm really passionate about is supporting identity shift inside the sex worker themselves.
And Reed Mihalko.
Your token straight man for
my token straight guy for the evening. Which
I believe I'm the left end of the Tenga double thing.
Oh, yes.
The Tenga double hole cup.
Are you really going to do it? You really want to do it?
I think we should.
You really want to try out the...
Are we gonna offend the guys next door?
Okay. So we're going to explain what this tool is again. In fact, if we could have Megan.
Megan, where do we have...
Oh, no, wait.
Right here. So it's a male masturbator, the docking toy. It's a way to engage in mutual masturbation.
You put one wang in one side, and then you put another wang in the other side.
Ned, where's Ned, my man?
Hello, hello.
This is for science.
Oh, no.
Boy, science.
He just turned out the lights.
I think we should have the lights back on.
Wow.
Who votes for lights on?
This is going to be like a sleepover.
I guess they're going to try to.
No.
We have achieved docking. You want to learn more about Reed and his Iron Slut Sex Educator Showdowns? His website is readaboutsex.com. This has been the Sex Geek Potluck on Sexploration with Monica.